The following podcast is a live recording of a radio show first broadcast by Fresh FM with assistance from New Zealand On Air.
Greetings and welcome to this Fresh FM meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous On Air. I'm Mary and I'm an alcoholic and I'm your chair for this meeting.
Hi Mary.
We will open the meeting with the AA preamble. Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of people who share their experience, strength and hope with each other that they may solve their common problem and help others to recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We are self-supporting through our own contributions. AA is not allied with any sect, denomination, organisation or institution, does not wish to engage in any controversy, neither endorses or opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and help other alcoholics to achieve sobriety. The topic for this meeting is acceptance, and I'm just going to read out of As Bill Sees It. Out of defeat, strength. If we are planning to stop drinking, there must be no reservation of any kind, nor any lurking notion that someday we will be immune to alcohol. Such is the paradox of AA regeneration, strength arising out of complete defeat and weakness, the loss of one's old life as a condition for finding a new one. Frances, can I ask you to share, please?
Thank you, Mary. Hello, everyone. My name is Frances and I am an alcoholic.
Hi, Frances.
What a wonderful reading. Out of complete defeat comes my strength today. My story, I've learned, is typical of an alcoholic. I started, I guess, for some quite late, at the age of 18, when I got a bit of freedom, picked up a drink, and oh my God, I loved that. I loved it. It allowed me to get into life, and I was ambitious, to say the least. I left the climes of New Zealand to go overseas and lived in London for 16 years. And, I mean, I loved drinking. It allowed me to relax, it alleviated me of the fear, of the mortal fear I had when I was interacting with others. I didn't really know that. All I know is I felt fantastic when I had a drink under my belt. Unfortunately, by the time I got to about the 30-year-old mark, it started to turn like a boomerang and started thrashing me. I started experiencing more what we call blackouts. And that's not passouts, that's me. I carried on for hours and hours drinking and partying and chatting and doing whatever, but the next morning didn't remember a thing. And that happened more frequently. And I started getting a bit of a tap on the shoulder from people around me going, oh my God, your behaviour last night was, you know, a bit, you really need to keep an eye on your drinking. You need to start, you know, maybe only having a couple. You need to perhaps stop drinking vodka. You need to do this. You need to do that. And I mean, I that was not who I wanted to be. That was not where my ambitions, you know, I wanted to take me to. I wanted to be a success in life, and I thought drinking was going to take me there. I ended up seeing a Harley Street, you know, London psychiatrist that, you know, and I remember one day, I'll never forget it, stopping on the street corner and realising I'd just slammed a couple of tequilas on my way to see him. And this was me after making the decision the day before that I was going to start controlling my drinking. He couldn't help me. He signed me, I think put me on antidepressants or something, but didn't do much for me stopping drinking. Add another 15 years on from there, and it got progressively worse. I've learnt since coming into Alcoholics Anonymous that alcoholism is a progressive disease, and that was certainly the case for me. I spent 10 years unemployed. I ended up coming back to New Zealand, having done two rehabs in England, still drinking. I did another two rehabs in Wellington, still drinking. And I thank God that I was introduced to the program of Alcoholics Anonymous while I was in those rehabs. I got to the point, my drinking took me to a one-bedroom council flat, trying to make 3 litres of wine last more than a day or two, which is absolute hell. I was absolutely isolated. I had no contact with family because, in my sister's words, I just can't watch you kill yourself like this. I'd had several suicide attempts. I was broken. I was absolutely broken. I had a moment of grace and I took myself to a meeting, and thank God there was a room full of people that accepted me with love. And, you know, that acceptance is the theme. Unbelievable. I was a bit of a, not a stranger to that meeting, but they still welcomed me with love. I got what we call a sponsor who took me to through the 12-step program of Alcoholics Anonymous, and what a difference, wow, my life is today. I'm sober, I'm employed, I'm legal, I've got a car with a license, I have a host of friends, I have my family back in my life. I am truly blessed. But I have to accept within the depths of my being, and I do today, that I am alcoholic. I cannot pick up a drink of alcohol without there being many more to follow. So I don't miss it today. I'm, how we like to say in the program, happy, joyous and free. It's been lovely to share with you today, and I'll leave it there. Thank you.
Thanks very much, Frances.
You're listening to a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous on air. If you want more information or help to stop drinking, please call 0800 229 6757 or go to the website aa.org.nz.
Carmichael, would you like to share?
Sure, thanks Mary. Hi, I'm Carmichael. I'm an alcoholic.
Hi Carmichael.
My story is very much a cut and paste of others. I'm one of four children. Three of us have drinking problems. I have cousins and relatives on both sides of my family tree with addiction issues. I'm from a low to middle class family, and the four of us children are close in age. We would socialise with relatives on a regular basis to celebrate Christmas, New Year, and enjoy summer together. Beer was the main drink to be had, and my introduction was having shandies. That's beer with lemonade added. I can still taste the bitterness. My first memory of hard liquor was around age 12, when a kid from around the corner borrowed a bottle of bourbon from his parents' supply, and about six of us had a sample. No one liked it, so it was left for me to get rid of. I drank it over the next couple of days. Dad always had a crate of quart bottles of beer in the garage, so it was always available. He never queried where it went, but in saying that, not much really disappeared. I left school at 17 and got a trade job. This is where drinking was encouraged, and marijuana arrived on the scene. Work dues were 18-gallon kegs, two if required, and a smorgasbord of clear and dark spirits and cases of wine for the ladies. Most of the time, these events ended early when fighting started. I remember clearly a Christmas tree being upended by a rolling maul going past. I would go to different bars and clubs from Thursday to Saturday. Occasionally, Sunday sessions would grow into parties. This continued through my 20s. I was having the odd blackout and waking up in the wrong place. I spent around 8 years offshore during my 30s. This is when I rekindled my relationship with my partner. My behaviour remained the same, and the blackouts increased. When our first child was born, we came back to New Zealand, where my partner trained to become a teacher, and I stayed at home to be the house husband. My drinking was drastically reduced, but I could grow some really mean weed. We had a second child, and when she started school, I got a part-time job and the drinking started again. I had moved away from 4% beer to 5 and 5.5% and into the dark spirits of rum, bourbon, whiskey. But the one that did the real damage was wine by the cask. Unsurprisingly, the blackouts increased, and at this stage I was drinking in isolation more often than not. I realised I had a problem, but simply denying it that existed and carried on. My family and friends suggested perhaps he was an issue, but I brushed that off as well. I was becoming more withdrawn. I was sent to the spare room beside the garage to sort myself out, but that made matters worse. I could drink till I dropped, no one would know. I was drinking all the time and my physical and mental health were in a steep decline. I knew I was in serious trouble, and if I didn't do something, I was going to become an also-ran. In absolute desperation, I stumbled upon AA. I got into the AA website and found the questionnaire. I ticked every box except one. That was, have you ever lost a job from drinking? So I went to a series of meetings and got sober for a month. I quit the meetings because I still denied the fact I am an alcoholic. I went back out without support and lasted another month before I started drinking again. I thought I could do it on my own. I went back to the meetings, but this time I finally took the advice that I couldn't do it without help. I've always seen myself as an independent and resourceful person, having to accept the fact that alcohol is a major and potentially fatal flaw in my character was a tremendous blow. But accept it, I have. I didn't see this at first, but I have been going to regular meetings, that's three or four a week, for about a year. Then I finally accepted the fact that I am an alcoholic. I don't mean that in an offhand or frivolous way either. I mean that in the fact that of my heart of hearts, to the core of my being. That will never change no matter what I do. Then what happened, my recovery really started to take shape. I've accepted the fact that I should never drink again. My drinking days are past me now. I grew up with very little in the way of boundaries, discipline, or life skills. With AA, I have a program I can work to, a sponsor that I keep in regular contact with, who acts as a sounding board and offers do's and don'ts. And with that, my story ends.
Thanks, Carmichael.
You're listening to a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous on air. If you want further information on Alcoholics Anonymous or to find out about AA meetings around the country, please go to aa.org.nz.
Hi, Kim. Would you like to share?
Thanks, Mary. My name's Kim. I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, Kim. Hi, Kim.
Crikey, where to start? That was a great reading. Thanks, Mary. Complete and utter defeat. You know, I didn't know I was an alcoholic. I just thought I drank super heavily, as did a lot of people my age. You know, I started drinking when I was around 13, 14, but not really regularly until I was about 16. That was kind of on a regular basis. And I was going to pubs and clubs and hanging out with an older crowd. I was still at school. But I just got on with it. I mean, that's what we did, you know. You just acted as if, and so despite some grades starting to slip, I was still, you know, I was still busy and functioning. I had part-time jobs, I was playing sport, and I was able to get enough credits, I suppose, at school to give me an opening into university, which I took. And there the drinking escalated some more, and that was the culture. But looking back now, I didn't see it as a problem then. I just saw it as normal. I didn't really see that my drinking was different to others, although upon reflection, I can see that now quite clearly. And then, it was getting me into a bit of trouble. And I was starting to do some geographicals, although I didn't know they were called geographicals at the time. And then when things plateaued in my career, I went abroad and did my OE into England. And that suited me perfectly because I could really embrace the clubbing environment of the late 90s. And there, my drinking and drugging took on a whole new level. And it was pretty dangerous. You know, I was, there were blackouts. There was bedwetting. There was dangerous situations on undergrounds. There was dangerous situations, missing trains and ending up with strangers or ending up in other areas within London where I did not live or belong. But all of the time, I was able to justify and rationalise my behaviour and my drinking. But it didn't bode too well with my husband, who was English, and that ended in divorce. And that was a result of my excessive drinking and drugging and lifestyle. And back to New Zealand I came. It was some years later that eventually I was introduced to Alcoholics Anonymous, and I'm really grateful to a woman who broke her anonymity to make contact with me and invite me along to my first meeting. And it was at that first meeting that I learnt to not look at the differences but to look at the similarities. But it did take me a long time. It took me 3.5 years before I could, you know, completely become defeated to this disease and really surrender to it. I had to get to a point where I was able or willing to make a decision and decide not to keep getting back in the ring with alcohol, because it was beating me up every time. Yeah, so that's kind of, you know, where the drinking took me. My road of recovery was a mixture of A&D clinic, rehab in St. Mark's and Blenheim. But it's really AA that has kept me sober and continued to keep me sober by going to meetings, getting sponsorship and working with a sponsor and helping others. And now I've got a good life, a clean life, and probably the greatest gift that I have is the peace of mind, you know, and not having this burden of alcoholism hanging over me. You know, I live a clean, productive life of good service and am really happy with it. Thanks for asking me to share.
Thanks, Kim.
Can't remember what you did last night or every night? Drinking causing you problems? Call Alcoholics Anonymous on 0800 229 6757. There are 17 meetings a week in the Nelson-Tasman region. Or go to the website aa.org.nz.
Hi Shane, would you like to share?
Yeah, sure. I'm Shane. I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, okay. Hi Shane.
This journey, it's been a journey of 52 years, really. I started drinking when I was 6, believe it or not. Back in the day, parties, well, where I come from anyway, alcohol was just an everyday thing, you know. Parties, it was just ridiculous, but it was what it was. And I grew up around the stuff pretty much every day. My drinking got serious around, I don't know, 11, 12, I suppose. Started pinching the stuff. My mum didn't really care, so nor did I. And the journey continued into my teens. By the time I was 15, I was out of school and working. And a majority of my money went on alcohol and it continued. I just didn't care, you know. A lot of it was through, I think, just the way we were brought up, I'd say dragged up. And depression, a lot of it, and anger. And I drank to push that down. And I drank for years and years. I'm a solo dad. I got 2 young boys. Thankfully, they do not drink. I'm blessed with that. This journey's been out there. I decided to give it away. I've been sober coming up 9 months at the end of this month, and it's a beast. It's a beast of a thing to give up. I wish I'd never started, but anywho, you know, can't take time back, can we? And I decided to quit. I went to a local drug and alcohol clinic, started there, and someone said to me, hey, Shane, why don't you go visit AA? They might be able to help you there. So off I went, and my first visit, I didn't know what to expect. To be honest, I thought there'd be a bunch of drunk people there, but no, they were all sober. And that was 9 months ago. And it's not easy. I get demons running around in my head all the time, you know. They just want to push me towards drinking again. And I don't really want to go back there. Because it's, you wake up hungover. I mean, I'm not working at the moment. I need to get into work. I need more money. But this staying sober is my first priority. And I'm just dipped my toe in a big old ocean at the moment, and I've got a long way to go. There's a lot of wise people around me who have given me a lot of good advice on what to do and what not to do. And because I've been through it, some of these guys have been there for 20, 30 years, longer most probably. And I'm just taking the advice from these folks. So, yeah, that's me. Thank you very much.
Thanks very much, Shane.
You're listening to a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous on air. If you're over drinking and want support to stop, there are 17 AA meetings a week in the Nelson-Tasman region. Ring 0800 229 6757 for help, or go to the website aa.org.nz.
Hi Brenda, would you like to share?
Thanks Mary. My name's Brenda and I'm an alcoholic.
Hi Brenda.
Yeah, I certainly didn't grow up wanting to be an alcoholic. It wasn't something I aspired to be. And I was adopted at the age of 6. And I never knew if I felt different because I was different to my family, or if there was something innately wrong with me. I had some really interesting messages. When I was younger, my parents told me they had a choice of two babies when they went to the adoption place, and they chose the wrong one. And so I always felt as though I wasn't good enough. I went on to meet my birth mother when I was 20, and she, in her wisdom, thought it was important to tell me all the different ways that she'd tried to abort me when she was pregnant. And so, you know, I've got a history of sexual abuse in my life as well. There just didn't seem to be anything that made me feel like I was meant to be here. And my way of dealing with that, of being okay with being wrong, was to drink and to take drugs. And that got me, that really got me through my life. I started drinking from a really early age, and I never drank how one would consider normally. The first time I got drunk, I a bottle of bubbly, cheap Chardon. It wasn't enough just to drink the bottle. I drank it through a straw. I've never been one. If one was the amount you were supposed to have, then three must be better. And that's how I drank, and that's how I took drugs. And I started working. I left school when I was 17 and started flatting. I moved out of home as soon as I possibly could. And I started working, and even at that age, you know, my weekends rolled into the week, And I drank my way through most of it. I didn't feel as though I had like a rule book or anything to guide me in what I was meant to be doing. And the only time I felt like I was connected to anybody was if I was drunk or if I was on drugs. And I actually originally found AA when I was 21. Because there was a guy that I was going out with and he got sober. So I got sober so that we could stay together. And I never fully accepted and admitted that I was an alcoholic. In my core, like I talked about it, I talked to it at meetings. And I didn't drink for 7 years. And on the outside, my life looked better. And I had a really good job and I had my first child and I owned a house and everything looked well on the outside. I still didn't feel as though I was part of this world. And on the New Year's Eve of the new millennium, my then husband suggested that, he said he was going to have a drink that night and I didn't even question it. I was like, yep, me too. And even after 7 years of not drinking, after I took that first drink, my drinking took off. And within that first week, I had started drinking bottles of wine instead of glasses, and it ended up being casks a day. And that marriage broke up, and that meant that I could drink however I wanted. And I got myself into some really, really horrendous situations and put my son in some pretty horrendous situations. And it didn't really dawn on me that there was something that needed to be. I still thought I had to be fixed. That was the problem. I had to be fixed. And I thought I'd worked it out. I needed a family around me that supported me. And so I took my second husband hostage and he was going to solve all my problems. And, nobody says I love you faster than a narcissist with nowhere to live. So we got married pretty quickly and it was, again, a really hellish relationship and it didn't fix my problems. And I ended that marriage because of the type of situation it was, and again I was free to do what I wanted, and I'd been done for drink driving, I'd been arrested for all sorts of things, and by this stage I was 46 or 47, and I was angry. I was really angry at the world, and it was everybody else's fault, and I didn't have any contact with my family at all. And I had my third drink driving conviction and thought that I'd stumbled on the perfect way to control my drinking, and that was to switch to methamphetamine, which meant that actually my life crumbled a lot faster than it would have. And for some reason, the pain of drinking became too much. The living with the guilt and the shame that I was living with every day became too much, and something inside of me just clicked and I just thought I needed to do something about this. I can't keep living like this. I didn't seem to want to die. Like, I wanted to die, but I didn't want to die. And dying by alcoholism is a really slow, painful way to die. I made promises with myself that I would only drink when this happened, or I wouldn't drink before I drove, or I would only smoke meth once every 3 months, and I couldn't keep those promises to myself. And on my fourth drink driving conviction, I actually lost custody of my son, my youngest son, and still I didn't really think too much of it. But for some reason, this particular day, I had the thought, maybe I should go back to rehab. Maybe I should go to rehab. And And I spoke to the AOD clinic and they agreed with me that perhaps that was a good option. And we'd just gone into lockdown when the decision was made that I could get into a rehab. So I needed to wait until lockdown had finished. And I could deny the fact that I'd lost custody with my son because he couldn't go anywhere. He was still with me. But as soon as that lockdown was lifted, he was gone. And even though I was waiting to get into a rehab, my life spiraled even worse. And I couldn't tell you what I did for those last couple of months. But somehow I survived it and I got into rehab. And while I was there for 3 months, I worked out that I wasn't going to be able to stay sober, clean and sober after rehab if I didn't have some support around me. I fully knew that I needed to have support to do this. And I'd been fortunate in rehab to be able to go to some AA meetings. So I knew it was an option. And I left rehab in Blenheim and moved to Nelson and got involved in the Fellowship of AA in Nelson. And I'm really, really grateful to the members here because they showed me how to get sober, encouraged me to get a sponsor, to get involved in service, and to work the steps of the 12-step program. And my life today, 4 years on, is completely different. I am employed. I have custody of my son. I have peace and a word I never thought I'd use, serenity in my life. I have experienced joy in recovery that I didn't know was even possible. I have hope about my future, and good things are happening and good things will continue to happen, and I just absolutely believe that. And it all changed when I just accepted that there was nothing wrong with me. I'm an alcoholic. If I stay away from that first drink and I work this program, my life is incredible. And yeah, I will be forever grateful for everything that I have managed to achieve so far in recovery. So yeah, thanks for asking me to share, Mary.
Thanks very much, Brenda.
Sick and tired of drinking? Call Alcoholics Anonymous on 0800 229 6757. There are 17 meetings a week in the Nelson-Tasman region. Or go to the website aa.org.nz.
Hi, I'm Mary and I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, Mary. Hey, Mary.
Hi. Acceptance. I found it very difficult to accept that I was an alcoholic. I didn't believe it. And I made several excuses for not being an alcoholic. I was too young and I was the wrong sex and I was too smart. But the evidence was there. Alcohol took me down pretty quickly in about 10 years from when I started drinking seriously, and I was never a social drinker. I drank for the effect. I drank to get drunk. One of my first major drunks, I ended up in a dangerous situation, entirely unsuitable company, and wondering how I might get out of it. Didn't stop me. And I guess that's the difference between normal drinkers and alcoholics. You know, and as young people, we can all have dangerous experiences, and people who aren't alcoholics normally stop getting into them. But anyway, I love the effect of drink, and I had some great times as a drinker. And I left New Zealand as a young person and headed to, you know, an absolute haven for alcoholics in Ireland, and where drinking was an utterly integral part of the fabric of life there, and I loved it. I discovered Guinness and whiskey, and they were a great combination. And the alcoholic, the drunk, was tolerated very much, was indulged, and so it suited me perfectly. And I was able to, I was young, I was able, I held down a job, I got a job in my, in the profession that I'd trained in, and I loved life there. But as Frances said earlier, you know, drink turns on us. And it started turning on me in the latter years of my time in Ireland. And I realised I had a moment of clarity, and I thought, I'm going to die in this country if I don't get out of here. And I rang my parents, and, you know, it was in the days well before you had to go to the post office to ring. You had to book a toll call, showing how old I am here. And I cried down the phone to my parents, and I haven't got any money. I'd been working, you know, I worked, but I drank all my money. And so God love them, they sent me money to Ireland. So that just gave me, you know, more excuse to drink. I drank that money away, and I was still in Ireland, and I was still in a situation that, you know, I needed to get out of. And as I look back now on my recovery, I know there were people placed in my path at all stops along the line that helped me. And one of those, or two of those people, were a couple I knew, I worked with, and they came up with the money. They bought me the ticket, and I got home. I didn't stop drinking, but it was very obvious to my family that I was an alcoholic, and I just said, "Oh, no, I'm just a heavy drinker, and I'm so sad to be leaving Ireland. You know, it's just a terrible place. I'm so lonely. Nobody understands me here," and kept on drinking. But I was also able to. I kept my job somehow, and it was, I had been back for about a year, and I had a terrible episode of drinking where I got violent. I got verbally violent. I abused a lot of people, and including my father, and it was terrible. And I somehow got myself into work the next day. I use the term advisedly. You know, I sweated, I vomited, I shook. And one of my colleagues noticed, probably a lot of them noticed actually, but and she said, "Have you ever heard of the A&D clinic?" Well, of course I hadn't heard of the A&D clinic. And that was another person put in my path. She made me an appointment and she took me there, because I would not have gone there on my own. And I did all those tests, you know, that asked the questionnaire, and I had the physical tests. And I went back the next week, and I was told I was a mid to late stage alcoholic, that if I kept drinking for another 6 months, my liver would collapse. Well, I couldn't believe that, you know. And I said, look, could I do that questionnaire again? Because I think maybe I was a bit hard on myself. And he said, well, actually, if you halved your score, you'd still be an alcoholic. So there wasn't too much I could do about that. And he made three recommendations. He made that I should take antabuse, that I should go to Queen Mary Hospital in Hanmer, and that I should go and see, and he gave me a woman's name who was a recovering alcoholic in the program of AA. And again, I believe it was not me that took me to that woman's workplace, and because I had no intention of taking antabuse or going to Queen Mary. But I went out of that clinic and I went to that woman's place of work, which was actually a radio station, and she had a very nice voice. And she came out of the radio station and said hello, and I said, you know, why I was there. And she said, "Oh, congratulations, I think you're very brave." And it was like, I thought in my head, my alcoholic head, I thought, what on earth could she teach me, this middle-class woman with a lovely voice? What does she know? You know, anyway, she knew a lot. And she had her own journey of alcoholism, and we were very different, but alcohol took us to the same place of loneliness, of desperation, of not living life truly and fully, and not knowing how to stop drinking, and not knowing that when you started pouring alcohol down your throat, what was going to happen. And she had found, she had 5 years of recovery in AA, and she said, I'll take you to your first meeting. Well, I didn't want to go. You know, I did not believe I was an alcoholic. I found it very difficult to accept that that was the case, though all the evidence was there. And she just kept hassling me every week. There was only, you know, very few meetings in Nelson at that time. She rang me every Monday to ask to go to, you know, to take me to a meeting, and every time I said no. And eventually she must have worn me down, because I said yes, I'd run out of excuses. And I went to my first AA meeting, and I thought they were all a shower of old losers, because they were overwhelmingly older men at that stage, except the woman who took me and myself. And I didn't hear anything. I didn't really listen to anything at that first meeting. But one of those old losers came up to me afterwards and said, you can't do it on your own. And that, you know, those words absolutely stuck with me. I thought that I had lived my life, you know, such as the arrogance and self-centeredness of the alcoholic. I thought I'd lived my life on my own, you know, making fabulous choices that had made me end up, you know, as an alcoholic. You know, I thought I'd lived overseas, I'd got jobs, I'd travelled, I'd, you know, and at that stage, I didn't know that it was a good idea to have a shower every day, change your clothes regularly, you know, to wash your hair. I didn't, you know, a lot of the things that people learn in their 20s, I didn't learn. And anyway, I didn't go back to that, you know, to the meeting, because I didn't think it had anything to offer me. But I didn't want to drink again, because my last drunk had been a terrible experience, and I knew I did not want to repeat that. So I didn't drink, but was daily, hourly consumed by the desire to drink. So I went back, you know, and they say the doors of AA swing both ways. And I went back in, and my life slowly started to change for the better. I got my physical health back quite quickly. I could see the whites of my eyes again. My complexion cleared up. My hair started shining. I had some money in my pocket. And I had a group of people who loved me because I was a drunk trying to get sober, and that was enough. And I was introduced to the, you know, 12 steps of AA, and AA has been the sort of foundation stone of my life ever since. I realised that I had to keep coming back if I wanted to stay sober, and I now know that I have to keep coming back if I want to stay emotionally sober, if I want to stay on an even keel, if I want to live a good and decent life. I need this program, and I also want the program now. And I've met some of the best people in my life in these rooms, and I have seen a lot of people broken come into these rooms absolutely broken, and I have seen them get well and stay well. Easy to stop drinking. It's the staying stopped that's the issue. And we stay stopped. Well, I stayed stopped, and I've seen a lot of other people stayed stopped by regular attendance at AA. And every good thing in my life, and there's a lot of good things in my life, are predicated on the fact that I no longer drink and that I go to AA on a regular basis. And I am deeply grateful for the people who, you know, for that first person who just kept dragging me, ringing me and getting me there, and for all the people I've met in my journey of recovery. And I wish everybody who walked into these rooms would get it. But it is a great joy to see, you know, for my own recovery, but also to see others get this program and get well and live great and decent lives. Thanks.
Thanks Mary. Mary.
Drinking causing problems in your work or home life? Call Alcoholics Anonymous on 0800 229 6757. There are 17 meetings a week in the Nelson-Tasman region. Or go to the website aa.org.nz.
Hi, Peter. Would you like to share?
Thanks. Yeah. Peter, alcoholic.
Hi, Peter.
You know, we hear in these rooms that if you're feeling terrible, the best thing you can do is go to a meeting and sit and listen intently to what other people say. And it's worked again today for me. It always works. I had an uncle who was a very successful publican and another uncle who was a drunk, but I grew up in an almost alcohol-free household. And I took to booze like a duck to water. I loved it from the very first drink. Not the taste of it. Hated the taste. Loved the effect. And quite soon after I started drinking, you have to wind the clock back a long way, recreational drugs arrived here as well, and I instantly developed a great fondness for them too. I ended up working in what was widely and correctly regarded as an alcoholic industry. And not only that, the worst alcoholics in that industry turned out to be my bosses, and I thought that it was, you know, being a working drunk was a good thing, really, and I gravitated towards those people. The difference between me and my colleagues and my flatmates was that they wanted to go to the pub on payday and take some drugs at the weekend. I wanted to get out of it, as we used to call it, every day. And I got away with that for a long, long time. I travelled a lot. Every country that I went to, I made it my goal to get drunk on whatever the local alcohol was and to learn how to order booze in the language of whatever country it was. I can still remember quite a few of those phrases. I knew well before I was 30 that I was an alcoholic. I didn't have any problem accepting that I was an alcoholic. As I said, I worked with a lot of people that I really respected who were alcoholics. What I had trouble accepting was that I had to do something about it, because it took me to a darker and darker place as time went by. I loved going to the pub. I loved laughing with my friends and getting drunk and doing silly things. And it was all good, you know, but I did a lot of things that I shouldn't have done and got away with a lot of things that I shouldn't have got away with. And I also suffered blackouts. And anyone who's had a blackout will tell you it's a really awful feeling waking up in the morning not knowing what you did the night before. And it started to prey on my mind anyway. You know, what might I do and discover that I've done? It really got to worry me a lot. And I did a lot of irresponsible things. You know, we lived out of town for a few years. Not only did I drive home over the limit, you know, all the time, but quite often I had to drive home on one eye because I saw two white lines and I had to close one eye to make sure I could get home. And I did that, you know, repeatedly without really worrying about it at all. So I misbehaved in a bad way for a long time. But as I said, before I was 30, I knew that I was an alcoholic. I kept going for another 20-plus years after that. And I hit a rock bottom. That's a phrase you'll hear in AA a lot as well, where I just realized that I had, not for the first time or the second time or the tenth time, but I'd made a complete fool of myself in a bad location. I'd embarrassed myself and my wife in front of a lot of people, and I think I've heard the phrase moment of clarity mentioned today. I had a moment of clarity, and this thought came into my head: this has got to stop. And luckily I knew somebody who was in the fellowship, and I was able to give that person a phone call 24 hours later, I was at my first AA meeting, and I was one of the lucky ones. I've never had a drink since, and it's been quite a long time. And I've come to love the fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous and the people in it. People sometimes say to you, people who aren't alcoholics and aren't in the fellowship, you know, do you still need to go to those meetings, or why do you still go to those meetings? And the stock answer is that I go because it's our primary purpose is not only to stay sober but to help other alcoholics achieve sobriety. And that's true. But it also says in one of our readings that the alcoholic who finds AA is like a miner who strikes gold and has a limitless load, provided that he gives it away. And that's really why I keep going, I guess, because to keep it, you've got to give it away. You know, I know that if I keep going to AA and keep doing my best to just to share my story and to encourage newcomers, and not only newcomers, because we all go through tough times in our lives, encourage my friends in AA, then I'll be able to stay sober. And I love being sober. And I love the fellowship of AA. And that's enough for me.
Thanks very much, Peter. That brings us to the end of our meeting. Thank you all for sharing. And we will now close with three of our 12 traditions and the Serenity Prayer. Tradition 1, personal recovery depends on AA unity. Tradition 3, the only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. And Tradition 12, anonymity is the spiritual foundation of all our traditions, ever reminding us to place principles before personalities. And I'll just ask you to help me close with the Serenity Prayer. God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference.
Can't remember what you did last night or every night? Drinking causing you problems? Call Alcoholics Anonymous on 0800 229 6757. There are 17 meetings a week in the Nelson-Tasman region. Or go to the website aa.org.nz.
The podcast you just listened to was a live recording of a radio show, first broadcast on Fresh FM with support from New Zealand On Air. Fresh FM is a community access media station based in Te Tauihu, the top of the South Island, New Zealand. The funding of Access Media makes these podcasts possible. To find similar programs by other community access media stations, go online to accessmedia.nz. If you or your group would like to know more about how you can have a program on our station, please contact us. Visit our website, freshfm.net, for our contact details.